Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Here's today's story. The Steelers hope that 33-year-old safety Troy Polamalu retires so they don't have to cut him, reports the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's Ed Bouchette, who's been on the show before. That is the elephant in the room, Bouchette told 93.7 The Fan. I expect him not to be here by some means. The Steelers are hoping he would retire, but I don't know if he's going to. Polamalu has 2 years left in his contract. He carries an $8.25 million cap hit for this season. He has spent his entire 12-year career with the Steelers, missing the Pro Bowl four times. Silence.
Yeah, I agree. I hope he retires. Or if the Steelers do have to cut him, I hope he retires then.
Okay.
No word on his website yet what he's going to do.
That's the difference.
I took a look.
Of course you did. Of course you took a look at his website.
Troy43.com. The official website of Troy Polamalu.
As I talk to Jeff Byers, I want you to take a moment and go over to Sarah Bartlett's desk where there's a dictionary across the hall. And look up the word obsessed. All right, we will come back with more of this rather interesting and entertaining conversation with Kevin in a moment. Does Sean Carey feel the same way you do? He seems more level-headed about things.
No, he's not more level-headed. No. We text back and forth through the NFL draft, and sometimes it's all caps trying to figure out why the Steelers did not address cornerback last year. So there's passion there, too.
See, you need to like players, not love them. Now, I realize what I'm doing is driving jersey sales down, but love your team. No, that doesn't work for you?
No. You can't love your team unless you love the players on the team. Or at least some of them. I mean, why would you root for a team and not like any of the players? That doesn't make any sense.
I just said like the players. I said that. Are you listening to this?
But there are some players that actually put themselves into a different category. Maybe it's because of their personality. Maybe it's because of the way they play. Maybe it's because of the way they treat fans. You know, some guys deserve a little more admiration than just being a fan of the team.
You say so. All right, let's...
Just go to Byers. Don't make the guy hang online all day long listening to this.
Let's bring in Jeff Byers, the play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. Jeff, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
All right. Decisions at 57 and heavyweight. What will the decisions be?
Well, I had a wrestle-off with Dylan Alden and Luke Fry last week on Friday, and Dylan was really looking forward to the opportunity. But he took a shot early in the first period, and you could see it right away, Steve. The shoulder came out. To Dillon's credit, he did wrestle through the rest of the match and actually kept it very competitive. Got in on a couple of other shot attempts, but both times you could see he pulled out because he realized he wasn't going to have the strength to pull it in. And so he...
Penn State football coach.
He was in too bad a shape, and Dillon actually wanted to go again, and the coaches and the trainers said, listen, this is silly. Luke Fry, and listen, Fry is a tremendous kid, tremendous wrestler, and he's a redshirt junior, but he's going to finish up with his studies this year, and so he'll move on. So this is kind of his one opportunity here to get into the starting lineup in the postseason, and he and Penn State are hoping for a James English-like story. Fry doesn't have the injury problems that James English has had, but he's had some injury issues over the years. He's moved up a weight class here, and he's hoping to make the most of his one postseason opportunity here at Penn State.
What about heavyweight?
Heavyweight, you know, it's one of those things, Steve. It's going to be Jimmy Lawson, and Jimmy Lawson won both the wrestle-offs. He also beat John Gingrich before the rider meet. They had their final wrestle-off. But it was one of those things where Gingrich was the aggressor, truthfully, in the wrestle-off bout. Got in on a couple of good shots, wasn't able to convert, and even the takedown that ultimately won it for Lawson in the second sudden victory period was a counter to a Gingrich shot. And so it was important for Jimmy Lawson to retain that job. They told him, you need to go out and be the aggressor here against Ryder. Now, he certainly was, and that was not a great test. So it is going to be Jimmy Lawson, and, you know, the hope is that Jimmy Lawson goes out and wrestles the way he's capable of. He certainly has the quickness to really be a problem for any heavyweight. But it really is up to him right now as to how he's going to finish out his career and whether he's going to take advantage of the opportunity in front of him. Now, he has looked more aggressive in the room. He's been going after the takedowns, and obviously Penn State is hoping that he does that in the Big Ten and NCAA tournament, because the coaches really believe he is capable of beating anybody in the country if he wrestles the way he's capable of doing. But we just haven't seen him do that a lot this year on the mat. I thought he was kind of starting to do that and turn the corner midway through last year before the injury ended his season a year ago.
You told me something interesting yesterday when you and I were working together about Zane Rutherford sitting out and observing. What has he observed that is going to benefit him when he gets back to full-time wrestling next year in a dual meet setting?
Yeah, there's a few things, Steve. One thing about Zane, he is just a remarkably intelligent kid and intelligent wrestler, and he really is one of these guys. Kind of like David Taylor. I mean, you show him something once and he gets it. I mean, he picks it up and he's able to utilize it. And what I think this offseason has really allowed him to do a couple of things. Physically, it's letting him add some muscle mass to his body. But I think from just the standpoint of understanding what the coaches are trying to accomplish, the way they go about their business, and kind of seeing how that translates onto the mat with how these kids progress during the course of the year. He has said that it really is allowing him to kind of understand the big picture process here and how important all of the little things are. And I don't know that Zane truthfully needed a lot of help with that. He picked up a lot of the little things pretty well a year ago. But I do think this year has been beneficial for him just to kind of maybe get even a little more hungry, but also just a little more understanding of everything that's involved with the process, beyond the wrestling, some of the nutritional stuff. And again, I don't know that a lot of this was stuff that he needed a tremendous amount of help in, but I do think that it has just kind of helped him process everything. And I know that he is very, very excited about getting back out onto the mat and competing next year.
All right, let's get to the guys that have some real shots here. Jimmy Gulabon, he has been a great story since the beginning of all of this. What does he have in the tank right now that can make the story continue?
Yeah, Steve, the big thing for him is just the attitude with which he is approaching everything now. It is just a much more relaxed Jimmy Golobon this year. It's a kid that obviously has a tremendous amount of confidence, but I think he is really excited about the opportunity here to compete in the postseason, try to win a Big Ten title, try to win an NCAA title. And the biggest change in him, though, is I just don't think if he gets down in a match, he's not going to get down on himself. He's just had, last year he would, I mean, you could see it when he gave up an early takedown. It was like the end of the world for him. And now this year, it doesn't matter if he's down by a couple of takedowns. There's just a different resolve to him. But the real key for him, Steve, I think, is going to be that first period. Both he and Jordan Conaway, I think, need to have good first periods against the top competition in order to give themselves a chance for success, because both of those guys have been outscoring their opponents and outscoring them by a good bit in the second and third periods. But you just can't afford to get into a two takedown hole against those top five or six guys in the country.
No question. Now I get to McIntosh and Brown, two guys that are going to be up in the higher seeded area. So now for them, their path as to what it would take for them to be Big Ten champions.
Yeah, for Matt Brown, I really think, Steve, it is just kind of controlling the emotions and wrestling within himself. Matt Brown has shown this year, he's done a very good job of it, with maybe one exception in the Virginia Tech meet, of not getting sloppy, not being overly aggressive and careless. And that's really, really over the last 3 years. That's the only time Matt Brown has gotten himself in trouble is against a couple of the elite kids where he's gotten over aggressive, and those kids have been able to use that against him. But he has been really steady this year, and I really think over the last 6 weeks to eight weeks of the regular season, just has been zeroed in. He's been working on some little things technically that I think are going to help him against Robert Kokesh if he does face the number one ranked wrestler in the country in the finals of the Big Tens. And I know he's hoping for that opportunity. Obviously, there are four great guys there with Brown and Kokesh, and then Logan Storley and Mike Evans, and I think any of them are capable of winning Big Ten or national titles. But I really like the way Matt Brown is mentally approaching things right now. And much the same thing for Morgan McIntosh. For Morgan, it's maybe a little more about being aggressive, not reckless, but aggressive against the top competition and not giving them too much respect. And I think that's where he's gotten himself into some trouble against some of these top guys. But Morgan, I have to tell you, Steve, this 2 weeks leading up to the Big Ten tournament here in the room is some of the best wrestling we've seen from Morgan McIntosh. And he is just one of those guys that when he is on, when he's opened up and firing in all cylinders, not only is he good, he is just fun to watch. He really has a unique style for a 197-pounder. And if he wrestles in the tournament the way he's been wrestling in the room the last 2 weeks, he's going to be very tough to beat. I think he and Kyle Snyder could put on quite a show in the Big Ten finals if they both get there.
Bites has been a lot of fun this year, especially the way he's wrestled down the stretch. This might be his shot. What do you think about him?
Steve, he is just such an impressive kid to me. He is another one of these guys that just has kind of figured things out. He's paid attention to what the coaches have told him. He's wrestling with an attitude this season, and he's always been aggressive, but he's learned a lot in terms of his technique and what works for him. You know, he has those long limbs so he can reach out and use the ankle pick that Kale Sanderson and David Taylor became so well known for. He can use those long legs when he's in the top position, and he's really learned how to use that leverage and use that length to his advantage. And that's one of those things that it can be a disadvantage or an advantage depending on how you use it in wrestling. And it took Zach a little while to kind of figure that out. But I know he is just chomping at the bit right now to get the opportunity. And he's another guy that in the room right now is just wrestling really well, really focused. I think he's added a couple of little techniques to what he can do with his finishes off of the single legs that I think will help him. And, you know, he's one of those guys, Steve, that I think is kind of a wild card. It certainly would not be shocking if he doesn't place at the national tournament. But Penn State's looking at him as a guy that could get into that top five or six on the podium. And if he does that, again, that's huge points at nationals, and I think at Big Ten's this weekend, you know, they're certainly probably going to need him to be a top four guy at the very least in order to make a run at the Big Ten title.
Jeff, there's a big difference between being a really good dual meet team and being a really good tournament team. Which teams among the contenders do you think are built to be good tournament teams versus dual meet teams?
I think Ohio State is built to be a tournament team, but they're relying on a couple of freshmen to score a lot of those bonus points that can make you a dangerous tournament team. And Bo Jordan has done that throughout the season at 165, and Kyle Snyder is certainly a wrestler capable of doing that, and he has been close to unbeatable as a freshman at 197. If those two guys have the tournaments that, you know, they're going to go in as the number one seed, so you would think they would have, then I think Ohio State is going to be right in the mix, certainly at Big Tens and possibly at Nationals as well, because they do have, obviously, Logan Stever is going to score a ton of points, you know that going in, and they have enough other pieces there to supplement it. Now, Hunter Stever is going to be a key for them. He's been injured and really has not wrestled the way we've seen him wrestle before. I mean, he's a guy that's certainly capable of being a top three type of competitor, but the way he's looked this season, I'm not sure that people would bank a whole lot on him getting onto the podium right now. And he's going to be, I think, one of the real key pieces here to what Ohio State can do. And again, even with Jordan and Snyder, you're talking about a couple of freshmen. Now, very talented freshmen, and they've handled everything well so far. But, you know, we've seen at the postseason tournaments, strange things happen to freshmen. I mean, Adam Kuhn last year, the heavyweight from Michigan, was looked at as was the number one seed, was looked at as the man to beat, and didn't place at the national tournament. So you don't know that first time around sometimes how these kids are going to respond. But I really think Ohio State is a really dangerous tournament team. Obviously, Iowa and Minnesota are going to be in the mix as well. But to me, Ohio State is the one team that stands out as a team that I think should be better tournament-wise than it was dual meet-wise.
Can Penn State be a dangerous tournament team?
Yeah, you know, for Penn State, again, I think the potential is there for them to be a really dangerous tournament team. But it's one of those where they need all of those pieces to come together. They need Conaway and Golubon to finish at Big Tens, certainly in the top three, probably at least one of them in the finals. You need Brown and McIntosh to come through in a big way. And then, again, they're going to need, you know, a Zach Bites and then either, you know, maybe a Luke Fry to surprise somebody. Matt McCutcheon's a kid who I think has turned the corner in a lot of ways here in the room just in the last 3 to 4 weeks here. He's really kind of figured some things out here on how to wrestle on the mat. And he's a guy that, again, could score some valuable points. But for Penn State to have success, they're going to need Brown and McIntosh to really come through, and probably Conaway and Golubon to be big point scorers. And then again, they're going to need two or three other kids to come through and do well.
Jeff, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And the Big Ten Wrestling Championships at St. John Arena in Columbus coming up this weekend. The qualifier to get to the NCAA Championships in St. Louis. When we come back, a great story out of the Heartland Conference in women's basketball. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, here's a great story. Absolutely great story. It's part of why I love sports so much. It's a story of tragedy, but then it's a story of love. Former Mount St. Joseph's women's basketball player Lauren Hill was named first team to the Heartland Collegiate Athletic Conference. The conference made the announcement today. Hill is a 19-year-old freshman, native of Greendale, Indiana, diagnosed with inoperable brain tumor during her senior year in high school, but decided to play for the NCAA Division III college, which is located near Cincinnati. She played 4 games this season. She made 5 layups, including 2 in her final game, a 66-65 win over the College of Worcester
on December 16th. She ended her playing career soon after because and became an honorary coach for the team. She's wheelchair-bound right now. The team held the senior banquet in her hotel room. In her hospital room because they wanted her to be a part of it and they loved her so much. And then today the conference announced that she was a first-team all-conference selection. That is so special that people would be selfless enough to do something. And by the way, what has Hill done off the court? Off the court, despite this incredible fight she has against an inoperable brain tumor, she's helped raise more than $1.3 million for research. Wow. That's a true first teamer right there.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Torture, huh?
There'll be an entire segment on you watching Troy Polamalu in a Ravens jersey.
I don't think so.
Oh, that would torture you.
Well, it might, yeah.
I think that's worthy of a segment, don't you?
No. No, I do not.
How about that story about Lauryn Hill, huh?
That's a great story.
Oh, geez. You know, it's just the tough part, though, is that, you know, it's inoperable. It's just an impossible situation to deal with. And to see people care about her so much that they would hold the senior banquet in her hospital room, that the conference would name her a first team selection. It's just, you know, I think that's just really special that everybody's trying to at least do something. You know, it's beautiful. Peyton Manning's going to take $4 million less, it appears, to stay with the Broncos. Give him a little more cap space, so he's going to take a pay cut. Something he never really has done in his career. We've always heard about Tom Brady restructuring his contract, constantly restructuring his contract. But it's something we have not heard much about Peyton Manning doing. Well, he's going to do it. He's going to restructure it, and they're going to knock $4 million off of it. Ben Roethlisberger's contract's coming up as well. That's the next part in all of this. What do the Steelers do with Roethlisberger? We've talked about the McCoy deal going to Buffalo, and Kiki Alonso is coming off a torn ACL, but he is a really, I think he has a chance to be a really good linebacker. The Eagles have a lot of cap room now to operate with, based on the moves that they've made this week, and of course we've talked extensively about the idea of trading up to somehow get Marcus Mariota to be the quarterback that Chip wants within his system. And he's a big system guy. But they have a lot of cap room. Now, what does Roethlisberger's contract do to the cap room of the Steelers? What does it do? Joe Flacco, it turns out this is the anniversary today of the day that he signed his $120 million deal. I think $58 million guaranteed with the Ravens. And, of course, Russell Wilson still has his contract to sign with the Seattle Seahawks. Part of what has made Seattle successful is that as a third-round pick, he's been hovering in the $500,000 to $750,000 range, which means virtually no cap hit. And they've had the ability, the Seahawks, to go out and sign Bobby Averill and people like that because their quarterback wasn't commanding so much money. This is going to be important to see what the Steelers do with the Roethlisberger contract because they really do have to sign him now. And what it does to the cap structure of the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is your team. This is the key to your team.
I'm listening.
It's the key to your team right here. And he's the key guy. He's the one guy you can't afford to lose. Contrary to what you think.
I don't have anything for that. I don't know.
See, you think that they could lose him and still be good enough. Don't you?
I don't know about that.
No. They lose him, they're an under 500 team.
No, I'm saying I don't know that I believe that they could lose him and be good enough. I don't.
In the past, I believe you have. You're not a fan of Roethlisberger.
No, listen, I think he does an outstanding job on the football field of handling the offense, running the offense, and showing team leadership. I have a little bit of a problem early in his career with his recklessness.
I understand that, but you know what? He's the key to the whole thing.
I don't disagree with you. There's a reason.
He is the absolute... Listen, absolute key to the whole thing.
There is a reason that the Steelers. There's a reason the Steelers have not done really anything at the quarterback position for a long, long time, and why they have quarterbacks that average 40 years old as their backup, because they don't really need them for more than a game or two,
exactly.
Unless Ben goes and does something dumb and gets suspended.
There are five or six guys that are just in this elite class at quarterback. Brady certainly is one. Manning has been there. We'll see if Manning can get back there. Breeze has been there. Aaron Rodgers absolutely is. Russell Wilson's worked his way into that conversation. Ben Roethlisberger definitely is one of them. He absolutely is one of them. And I realize he is not the most popular Steeler out there. I realize that. Doesn't matter. He's the best player you've got.
Well, I don't think there's too many Steeler fans, though, that would disagree with you on that. Even though he may not be popular, you know, he's still needed.
Needed. He's the best player you've got. He's the best shot you got at winning. You can lose a lot of other people. You can lose a lot of. You can't lose him for an extended period of time. You could, for example, lose Le'Veon Bell, and you could find another running back. He won't be the receiver Bell is. He definitely won't be the blocker Bell is, and he won't be the runner that Bell is. In fact, you probably would need two different guys to fill that role. You know, you've talked about Reggie Bush. Well, he'd be the kind of guy that would be one of the two guys you'd take to fill the role for all he does. But you could fill it. You could. Antonio Brown's an outstanding receiver. You could find other receivers. But you're not going to find, unless out of nowhere you acquire Aaron Rodgers, somebody better to play this spot than him. Simple as that. It's a quarterback-centric league. Is it any surprise that the last four quarterbacks, the quarterback in the Super Bowl, have been named Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson, and Tom Brady? I mean, that's the way it is.
This was
why is it that the Eagles are so desperate to somehow get to a part where a guy like Marcus Mariota could be their quarterback in a system of Chip Kelly? They need that guy.
Well, it's a very unique quarterback to be in that system. Not any quarterback could be in Chip Kelly's system effectively, I don't think.
Well, and more so than that, but the guys that he has right now, Michael Vick, Mark Sanchez, and Nick Foles, don't fit what he wants to do. And frankly, not one of the three is good enough. They're all backups, in my opinion.
This will not become, speaking of quarterbacks, this will not become official until March 10th. But Fox Sports now reporting that the Vikings are going to acquire Matt Cassel. They've agreed to trade with the Vikings to acquire Matt Cassel. My apologies, I had it backwards.
Yes, career backup that will get a chance to compete for the starting job. See, that's where you are. That's where your team would be without Roethlisberger. You'd be trying to do something like that.
Giving up a sixth-round pick in 2015 and I guess a fifth-round pick in 2015, a seventh-round pick in 2016.
Hey, but that's where you'd be.
No, I agree with you.
This was a big offseason, big signing. I mean, and he'll take up cap space. Now, it'll be interesting to see how Roethlisberger has it structured to see if it gives them room to do some things. I think they've done a better job of the Steelers of forming their offensive line, their defense. Oh, by the way, guess who's interested in Jason Worlds?
Well, just about anybody who needs a linebacker would be interested in him, I would think.
My understanding is the Eagles are.
Yeah, well, that would be a good team, a good fit for him, I would think.
Yeah. So.
What's the one position the Chiefs need the most?
The Chiefs?
Yeah. They need a wide receiver.
Yeah, I guess they need a wide.
I know. Sure. Did they get a touchdown from a wide receiver this year?
No, they did not.
I don't think they did.
But that's more in Alex Smith than it is in the wideouts. Alex Smith is not the part about Alex Smith is okay. Let's take Roethlisberger. It may drive you crazy, but he's a risk taker.
Oh no! I've said this many, many times as a Steeler fan to many other Steeler fans. 9 times out of 10, he is going to make a play holding
the
ball.
He's high risk.
Yep.
He's high risk, high reward.
And
okay?
you are going to pay for it sometimes.
Alex Smith is not a high risk, high reward quarterback. That's why they don't have any, you know, it's a combination of the wideouts aren't that great, although Bo's not bad. But he is not a high risk, high reward quarterback. That's the issue that they have. That's a big issue that they have. I'm going to take a little time tomorrow. I'm going to go over to the morning workout for the football team tomorrow. See how they're doing. I think it's the last one they have before they get to spring break. So I'm going to get my backside over there about 5 in the morning.
Ugh.
Take a look. No, I want to see what they got. I want to see what's going on.
I understand, but that's early.
I want to see. Yeah, well, it's early, but it's what you got to do. I just want to take a look at it, see who's in shape, who's doing what. They start spring practice 2 weeks from Friday. 2 weeks from Friday, they start spring practice. Okay? So that's where they are. 2 weeks from Friday, they start spring practice, and then Blue White Games April 18th. A lot of things I'm looking forward to see what they've got and to see who's come out of this winter. I've been around some of the guys a little bit. I've talked a little bit to Austin Johnson, a little bit to Jordan Lucas, Zettel. I talked to Hackenberg on Sunday. Let's see. Who else? Lucas. Parker Cothran. Talked to him a little bit. Wendy Laurent. Oh, and Naeem Wortman. I've talked to several guys during the guards, but I'm going to go get over and see the workout tomorrow morning, see how they're doing. And we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow on the show. It's Penn State basketball tonight, Ohio State. D'Angelo Russell, the guy that got Phil Jackson in trouble and fined, will be in the building tonight. Phil Jackson went out to the Ohio State-Nebraska game in Columbus and then commented afterward about what a really nice player that D'Angelo Russell is and what a great game he has. Unfortunately, in the NBA, You can't do that. He was fined. This may be D'Angelo Russell's only appearance in the Jordan Center. Ultra-smooth player who looks like he is gliding out there while everybody is running. Tough, tough matchup. Tough matchup. It's also senior night here tonight. DJ Newbill, 6 points away from 2,000 in his career. Ross Travis will finish as the third all-time leading rebounder at Penn State. Kevin Motmany from Penns Valley is a 4.0 student, Shriers Honors College. Alan Wisniewski, who is Motmany's roommate, says, well, my GPA isn't quite what his is. Well, his is 3.4 as opposed to the 4.0. Wiz came here out of Sterling Heights, Michigan, and he came here to be an engineering student. He will get his degree in engineering. But he was a walk-on. You know, he's playing some pickup games against some of the guys, and they said, geez, you ought to walk, you know, you ought to try out for the basketball team. You know. So he did, and he made it. But he's out of state. So there was a period of time where Alan Wisniewski was working at Quiznos downtown on Beaver Avenue, practicing with the basketball team, and going to class as a walk-on. His boss at Quiznos was great, made sure he had the time he needed and so forth to do it. Conversely, of course, the basketball guys were great because they were making sure, hey, look, we know Alan has to work. We also know he has school. Finally, a point came where Pat Chambers had a scholarship freed up, and he gave it to Alan, which was tremendous. I mean, the Wisniewski family was thrilled. Out-of-state tuition is off the charts. Alan's going to graduate with a 3.4 grade point average. He already has a job at Ford. He interned at Ford last summer in transmissions, and he has a job with Ford all lined up after he graduates in May. So those are the four guys that'll be on the floor tonight for the final time in their respective careers here at Penn State at the Jordan Center. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Well, it's a traumatic week for Kevin. I love how you wear your passion on your sleeve. I do enjoy that.
I'm sure, yeah, for your entertainment purposes.
Nothing to do with entertainment. I appreciate that, but I think I always talk about, look, you know, front of the jersey, not back of the jersey.
Today,
sports works like this. It is about assembling talent, but also doing it in a salary structure. And sometimes the two of them don't meet up. And that's the tricky part in today. How do you put together a talented roster, but do it in such a way where there's fiscal management? Chip Kelly's coming to Philadelphia. He looked around. He's had LeSean McCoy 2 years, and doesn't want him on the roster anymore. I mean, that position you can get, you know, there. That has gone from must have that guy, that dominant guy, to a position where being a first round pick's a long shot now for a running back. Frank Gore spent all those years with the 49ers. He's a free agent now. D'Angelo Williams spent all those years with the Carolina Panthers. He's a free agent now. Trent Richardson was a first-round pick. Browns, Colts, they're releasing him. The Patriots had three different leading rushers in October, November, and December this year, including your guy LeGarrette Blount. It's, you know, but when it comes to the guy under center, you better have somebody who's really, really good. As great as Adrian Peterson has been with the Vikings, and I'm talking about pure on the field performance here, what have they done? What have they done? Now, I'm not saying you can't put together a great running back, can't get you somewhere. But the Seattle Seahawks with Marshawn Lynch went where? As opposed to the Seattle Seahawks with Russell Wilson. Name any Denver Broncos running back. Now, you do have, in my opinion, the Steelers, the best running back in the game in Le'Veon Bell. And I think that's a real luxury to have somebody that is an every down running back that you do not have to substitute for in special situations. Because look, sub packages give away what you're doing. If you don't have to sub package guys, you're not giving away what you're doing. It could be third down and six. Bell's still out there. You know what? You may still run the football because he'll get the first down for you. You put in a third down back to replace him. I think everyone knows in the ballpark you're going to throw the football. You can tip off through sub packages what you're doing. And everybody sub packages these days, unless you have a guy like Bell that's an every down guy. That's why I talk about every down linebackers being so important. Every down linebackers are really important as far as I'm concerned. Because now you don't have to sub-package for them. Now you don't tip off to the offense what you might do. Guy's good enough in coverage. I may drop him off. I may blitz him. You want to run something. You want to take and try and see if you can trick me with a third and five. My linebacker's still in there. See, if you have an every-down linebacker that can handle the run as well as the pass and don't have to sub-package, it gives you more options as a coordinator. Same thing with a really, really good running back that can handle all three phases like Bell does. There aren't many like him.